Hey, this is Jeremy Roenick, and guess what? You guys are listening to the Jim Bob Show.
Hey, this is Wayne Larrabee, and you're listening to Roar on WGN.
Hey, this is Jim McMahon, and you're listening to the Jim Bob Show.
I had to pop a beer for this one.
Attaboy.
Yeah.
Hey, this is Brian Urlacher, and you're listening to the Jim Bob Show.
That's awesome. Oh,
and
that's
then,
it.
How about one? This is Brian Urlacher. I'm not a bitch.
No.
That's about, love that one. That's,
half the coaches in the league. The Mondays were the worst. And that's when you really got tested, when you came off a tough loss. You got into the office on Monday. You found out two more players were hurt. You didn't realize. The sky's always falling in the NFL on Mondays.
Yeah, they're 40-1, which is shorter than I thought. You know, it.
Why aren't they 100-1?
Yeah,
you know?
I know.
Live, 720 WGN high atop Chicago in the Skyline Studio. It is the Jim Bob Show, game day edition. And Jim Bob, this is one of those big, big weekends in sports. A lot of times professional sports take the center stage, but when it comes to basketball and tradition and pageantry and all of that, and really a coveted title for athletes as they go throughout their journey in sports, the Final Four, right? It's the kind of thing as a kid, you're there, you're playing, you're out in the yard, you're, you know, in school, you're pretending that it's a shot to make the Final Four, and now four teams, well, they're in.
The stage is finally set, Dane. It's the 2024 NCAA tournament, and it starts on Saturday. We got top-seeded Purdue, who got beat by Fairleigh Dickinson last year in the very first opening round in 2023, and we're embarrassed. We're embarrassed. And here they are now, you know, rallying to come back and beat number 2 Tennessee in the Elite Eight, and the Boilermakers are taking on, guess what? If anybody had this in their bracket, I'm going to be shocked. The number 11 North Carolina State, whose impressive run in the ACA tournament. I mean, hey, we're talking 9 straight wins with these guys here. So that's an impressive run. You know, then we got to look at Alabama, okay? And, you know, they overcame some tough competition getting there. But here's the deal. Who is going to beat UConn? Nobody. Nobody's going to beat UConn but UConn. And the Boilermakers, you know, let's break this game down. Boilermakers are 8.5 to 9.5 point spread, depending on who you're using and so forth. But then I think we got the Huskies are like 11.5 point favorite against Crimson Tide, which I think UConn's going to beat Alabama by 14, and I think the Boilermakers game is going to be a little tighter. I don't think that they're going to blow out North Carolina State. The North Carolina State defense is good. I'm telling you what, I don't know who's going to beat UConn.
I don't know that anyone is, but like you said, Jim Bob, unless they beat themselves, but that happens on, you know, regularity when it comes to the tournament, whether those seeds that don't get where they're supposed to, it never really works out the way that you hope. And that's part of that thing. That talk a little bit about the intangibles. You think of NC State, maybe as the ghost of Jim Valvano back then when they were surprise winners of that tournament. The last time they were there, I think it was like 40 years ago, but a team can get on a run in this. Not all the time do you get on a run all that way. We remember Loyola a few years ago got on a run like that, got to the Final Four, but then I think the team maybe feels like it's mission accomplished, right? That you got there, you got to the Final Four. I don't think that they'll be able to take it any further, but you never know.
Well, they got a very good defense. I like the defense of North Carolina State, and they got shot making capabilities. But, you know, again, listen, Connecticut's been blowing out their opponents in such a spectacular fashion, you know, all tournament long. I mean, I think the margin of victories is 17, 18 points. You know, when you can run up 30 points on a team like Illinois, 30-0 run, I think Alabama's in trouble. I think that Purdue and the big guy, though they present to how to defend, you know, Purdue's big guy in the middle there is going to be too much for North Carolina State. Their run's over. And like you said, they had a good run. I don't believe in ghosts. So I don't think that, and I love Jim Valvano. I wish he was a ghost and would come back and enlighten us. Cause boy, what a character that guy was, man. I'll tell you what, but yeah, I think North Carolina State's run's over. I think they're going to keep it closer with Purdue than the predictions, but I will say that UConn's going to blow out Alabama.
Having supreme talent and the odds in your favor in every conceivable way seems like a good problem to have. Jim Bob, as a guy who has been there on the court, but also in the coach's mind. Oftentimes here on the Jim Bob Show Game Day Edition, we kind of get into the coach's mind. What are they thinking? Because, you know, there's a lot of ways that the coach can either mishandle a game, or I don't know that they can actually completely blow it, but they can certainly
be thinking.
Bobby Hurley.
Bobby Hurley's trying to present that everybody hates UConn. Who is he? You know, that's bull. He's just making crap up, okay? Bobby Hurley trying to motivate his team. Right. They hate us. They all hate us. Hey, guys, we're the devil. That's not true, Bobby. Everybody loves UConn, and they love you, okay? You're such a BSer, okay? Nobody hates UConn, but you went from a coaching perspective. That's what Bobby's trying to do, trying to fire his team up, say they hate us. You know, I mean, he's an interesting cat, man. I said, I tell you what, talking about a competitor, I mean, when you look at these coaches on the sidelines and you look at their demeanor, I mean, do you want to play Bobby Hurley in Monopoly, or yes or no?
You just keep your eyes on him, right? That's what you want to do. Well, do you think
he'll throw the board? He's like me. I threw the board, and I'm proud of it. People go, "What were you like as a kid growing up?" I go,
"As a Monopoly player,
Monopoly board." Well, number one, if you wouldn't negotiate, I just turn the board over.
Yeah. Well, so everything should go as expected, you know. But look, so let's talk a little bit about, because unless you're one of those people, I guess it's everybody that loves UConn. If they had a way to lose it, what would it be? Is it just, hey, their shots are off? But typically you don't have, not everybody's shots off. So even if one player maybe isn't having their best game, is there one thing that you can think of that they need to avoid? Or are they just so good, it's just autopilot?
Alabama's never been to the Final Four, okay? North Carolina State is back for the first time since winning it, you know, in 1983 with Jim Valvano and the cardiac pack. I mean, the foul pack. I mean, I can't remember how many fouls they committed in the last minute and a half of the game. They did Hack-a-Shack before Hack-a-Shack. I mean, remember. Not everybody listening is in tune to 1983 basketball like you are, me are, because I'm old. But I'm still, you know, I'm not senile. I remember, you know, Jim Valvano, and they go, let's just foul him. You know, they're shooting 22% from the free throw line. I think that's a good strategy. And it was. So UConn, let's go. Let's stay on track here. They're on stage to be the next team since Florida 2006, 2007 to complete one of the most dominant, you know, two-year tournament runs in history. Purdue, good second place finish for you guys. But, you know, hey, is anybody standing in the way of Purdue and UConn to this final? Of course, Alabama's sitting there, North Carolina State there. This Final Four play, to me, it's just, let's just get through the formality playing those games. We know Purdue's going to win. We know UConn's going to win. That's how that's going to go.
It's going to shape up for a pretty good game. Of course, I think UConn's going to win, but for Purdue, I know that, you know, we're not too far from there. A lot of people in the listening area of all the stations, or many of the ones that we're on, you know, have some affinity. A lot of graduates and alums for Purdue. It's a big deal. They're excited. It's a basketball school.
Absolutely. You know, I mean, Purdue, you know, the Big Ten, I mean, you know, UConn went on a 25-0 run against the Big Ten champions, Illinois.
wasn't that crazy? I was watching that, and I'm just like, geez, like at some
the
point.
The Boilermakers, I've watched them a bunch of times. Okay, I will tell you, I was talking about the Boilermakers. I've watched them a couple times, and I love Smith, and he's just one of those guys that just such a competitor, too. But, I mean, you know, the Boilermakers, they've been pretty much locked in since the start of the season. I think that loss, the first round of the tournament last year, impacted this 24 season. It would me. You know, I mean, it's like when I was in seventh grade, we played state champion girls high school team, and we beat them by like 22, and they lost the first five games of the year. I mean, because they got beat by seventh graders, but then they went on and won the state championship again. But I mean, you know, I know how these losses can impact you, and I think that probably Dickinson set the stage for Purdue to come in. I mean, you know, they've got, I think their field goal percentage is about 50%. You know, they are shooting, you know, 41% from, you know, 3-point percentage. Pretty good, Dane. I would love to take you out onto the court and see what Dane what Bain's 3-point percentage is, and I'm going to tell everybody here, it's less than one.
Well, 1%,
ladies and gentlemen.
I mean, Purdue is playing as well as they can, but you think about this when you try to compare, you bring up Farley Dickinson, some of the teams that you played over the course of the year, and you look at Illinois. You and I watched that game together, Illinois against Purdue in that game, and Illinois gave Purdue all they could handle for that game, and then you look at the way UConn handle Illinois. I mean, it doesn't bode well.
You know, no, I know. The big guy for Purdue, Zach Edey, the fact of it is that his 40-point, 16-rebound performance in the Midwest Regional against Tennessee, I mean, that's the stuff of what, you know, some of the greatest players ever. I mean, we're talking about Elvin Hayes and Bill Bradley, Bo Kimble, guys with, you know, we're talking about in the, he's like in the just the fourth player in, you know, 60 years with a 40-point performance and 15 rebounds. And so he's going to be a great pro, okay? He's going to be a fantastic pro when we start talking about, you know, breaking down the teams. I mean, you know, he's the big guy there for Purdue. I mean, and Smith is great. You know, you were talking earlier about the coaches. Talking about the coaches, though, too. I mean, we talk about the players, talk about the coaches. I mean, you know, you talk about Matt Painter from Purdue. I mean, he deserves some recognition and adulation as he gets ready for, you know, to go into the national semifinal. I mean, he's not been celebrated as probably much as he should be as for the kind of coach he is, in my opinion. I think he's a very sharp basketball mind, and he's got a really good playbook, and he really helped the Boilermakers elevate their offense greatly over last year's team. So I'm giving him a lot of kudos for what he's done as a coach. But, you know, their best player is Zach, and, you know, he's going to be a tremendous pro. They play a really good half-court offense, and, you know, with Zach commanding just so much attention in the post, they really have. They play a 4-1 offense kind of, and they've got four very capable 3-point shooters. Purdue's a dangerous team. I don't think they got the wherewithal to beat Connecticut, but they're gonna be.
You're like, they'll be within 20. I would say, you know, that's how dangerous.
Yeah, exactly. So, but anyhow, I don't know. What do you want me to say about, you know, the teams I'm saying are not even going to be in the final? You want me to talk about Alabama, the Crimson Tide, and why? And then people are like, well, you're shortchanging, man. I mean, come on, tell us something about, you know, if, Alabama.
If Jim Bob, if they say your shirt changes, like, check your pockets. There's nothing there. You got nothing. Isn't this really it? Is like, hey, all the teams that are there, they're playing at their best, either because they are incredibly great or because they're on a streak and they've all got there. And for some of those teams, it's as far as you'll go, right? Because one is head and shoulders above the rest.
Yeah, exactly. Let's talk about this. Okay, so Alabama, this is their first Final Four appearance ever.
Ever.
Okay, no NCAA titles. All right, so this is all new territory to these guys. You know, Nate Oates, here's what you need to know. Former assistant coach under Bobby Hurley. Guess what? No assistant coach is under Bobby Hurley. He's ever beat Bobby Hurley, okay? Not going to happen. And so not going to happen here.
Now, is it because he keeps all of the success secrets so close to the vest, or does he implant like those coaches?
Remember Waterboy? Remember Waterboy?
Bobby Boucher? Yes, of course.
Bobby Boucher and the secret playbook that the Fonz, Henry Winkler had, the favorite playbook. I mean, Bobby didn't give that all up to Nate Oates.
That's true. Come on. That's, oh, that, well, but, or does he implant a chip in them so they're like sleeper cell losers and he can control them that way?
They don't even know. You know, and now we're talking Bourne stuff, okay? Like, you know, Jason Bourne. Now you're going into the thrillers.
The stakes are high, Jim Bob. I mean, I wouldn't put anything past him.
Hey, Mark Shears, though, the player for Alabama, is a He showed it in the last game. He's an elite shooter. I think he's a dynamic scoring guard. And, you know, he's answered the call for Alabama when they need him. The problem is they're going to need him a lot and a lot and a lot, probably for, you know, I mean, Mark Shears will go, my arm hurts. I'm having to shoot so much. reminds me when I was in high school, Dane, I shot like 52 times in a game. And somebody goes, 52 times? And go, yeah. And I go, we had to call a timeout so I could rest my arm. But I made 26 of them, Dave, yeah, okay?
I mean, so
50%, okay?
The end justifies the means there. Well, I wanted to be able to get to this. You mentioned, you know, as a seventh grader, beating the state champion girls team, right? And so that girls team, you know, and then they lost some games, but they pulled it together, whatever. The girls teams of today are completely
I didn't say I played Caitlin Clark. I didn't play. No one in my era was like Caitlin Clark, okay? And by the way, I won tens of thousands of dollars here the other day on Caitlin Clark. Number one, I was wrong. I posted some stuff, and I really beat up LSU for not being out there for the anthem. I did not know it was a choice. The teams had their choice, and I did not know this. I did not know that a lot of the conferences put in rules for the teams to avoid things like players kneeling and so on. And so I did not know that conferences had established some of these rules. Big 12 had them and so forth. And, you know, I called our athletic director and I talked to Gene Taylor and I said, hey, you know, what's the deal? And he goes, well, hey, here's the deal. There's some conference rules that were put in place. But I really hammered LSU about not being on the court for the national anthem. And I was wrong, which I rarely say. You know, I've got that shirt that says, I could be wrong. But then below it, it says, I doubt it. but I was wrong for hammering LSU so bad about that. But that was the impetus that made me put five figures on Iowa. And I'm so glad that I got stirred and my heart was moved by being wrong. I was wrong, but I was so pissed. I went ahead and made the five-figure play on Iowa because the spread was 2.5, and I did it. And guess what? Caitlin Clark proved me right. And so my seventh grade team, we would have got beat by 40 by Caitlin Clark. She could have played us 1-on-5 and beat us.
I thought you were going to say, hey, would your team, you know, your seventh grade team be able to beat the, you know, Caitlin Clark? And you'd be like, no, we'd probably lose by a couple. And I would say, why, Jim Bob? You guys were incredible. He's like, well, we're like 60 now. So
I can tell you this. Here's the deal. I don't want to get into this argument because I'll get beat up over this. But there's a lot of boys state champions that would smoke a lot of the NCAA teams out there. Okay. If we're being real about that, don't be teasing me about my seventh grade team. I'm admitting we would have lost to Caitlin Clark.
That's a big step.
That was in seventh grade too. I don't even want to talk about when we were in high school and I was putting up 76 points on people. Okay. I mean, what we would have done, it would be fun. Okay. But that's a whole nother discussion we could get into, yeah, and then probably get fired.
No. It was like, which present day teams would Jim Bob's high school teams or grade school teams beat? And we could have a whole schematic, like a sort of like a fake March Madness, you know, and all that. Well, but here's the thing. The reality of it is that whole Title IX thing, and we've watched a lot of, you know, prognosticators and sports shows just talking about what it has done, and even rivalries, whether you like them or you hate them, and you need somebody to hate, you know, and everything has got to be a good guy and a bad guy depending on who you come down for. But they have created an entertaining product. You know, they're selling out state. The TV ratings are great. You're seeing a definite higher quality of basketball in there. Women's basketball, at least at the NCAA level. I don't know that they've got, you know, a product that's really selling at the WNBA level. Not like this, but you're seeing evidence they're there.
I'd have a hard time. And this is just me off the gut, and I could be wrong, like my shirt says, but below it says, I doubt it. I don't know that there was a more watched WNBA game than the Iowa versus LSU game. I will tell you, I was at a place called Flanagan's in Palm Beach because I was doing a bunch of promotions for El Bandito Yankee in Florida, and there must have been 300 guys at the bar cheering for every shot, and the place was kind of divided. I mean, we had this one group that was all LSU and SEC, and then you had, you know, seemingly the Northerners, the birds that had flown down for the winter that were for Iowa. And I'm talking about, I have never seen a women's NCAA game as much spirit that was in Flanagan's in Palm Beach as that game. I was actually taken back by some of the yelling and the cursing and yelling and cursing. But they were into that game, man. Yes. I would say we'd have to look up the ratings on that. But I would say that I don't think there's been a WNBA game that had any better viewers.
No, I don't even have to look it up. There's just no way. Everyone was watching that. It was huge. And her all season long, you know, and you can debate, you know, Pistol Pete and records and just the format of the games, but she is making a big difference. She's one of those transformative athletes.
There's a big debate about that, though. Hey, there's a big debate. Listen, if Pistol Pete had the three-point deal, he would have averaged about 54 points a game, maybe 60.
Right.
Okay, he was that dominant of a player. Nobody understands what Pete Maravich did and the timeline that he did it and the era that he did it. They had a three-point line back then. Pete would have averaged 54 to 64 points. I mean, he was that good. I mean, there's not anywhere close. Hey, God bless her for the accomplishments, but it's a different era, different talk. Pete Maravich was a very, very special college player. So is Caitlin Clark.
Yep. Yeah, shot clock, too. You got to factor that in. It wouldn't have had those same kind of defenses that you had in college basketball.
Shot clock, he might have scored. Now we're talking with a shot clock, he might have scored 74. You know, because here's the deal. I mean, you know, they think about it. Going back to the times when North Carolina would, you know, Dean Smith did the four corner and stalled for 8 minutes.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Okay. That, you know, think about it. You know, some of the games were 48 to 44.
and they were, when you look at those tapes, like they were stalling the entire time. It was just keep away is really all it was.
That's all it was, man. I don't like the comparisons. I get uncomfortable with it. And when we start talking about, you know, Caitlin Clark and the greatest scorer in college basketball history, and we look at, you know, a guy like Pete Maravich, who, you know, like I said, it's a completely different era. And it's kind of like I set myself up and I made myself not like LSU. I don't like taunting Dane, you know. I mean, I don't like people shaking hands and raising hands and rings and fingers and, you know, after they win a game like LSU did last year. I hate that crap. And so my anger has been with me for a year now. And I got it's redeemed. I've got redemption now. I'm happy. I'm richer.
it's all that anger is translated. If you worked through it in a very cathartic way to victory on the betting side, and you've won some now. Well, here's the thing: as we go to break, is one of the things you mentioned, the comparison between the college basketball thing, Caitlin Clark, and the WNBA. And one thing is for sure is that she will make that product more visible, more valuable as she transitions to there for the next year. We're going to take a break. We'll have more when we come back. It's the Jim Bob Show, Game Day Edition.